Let's get this started with record producer Rick Rubin.
This speech is my recital. I think it's very vital to rock
around.
That's right.
On top.
It's tricky. It's right. Here we go. It's tricky to rock around. To rock around. That's right. On time. It's tricky. It's tricky.
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 Tricky. It's tricky to rock around. To rock around. That's right. On time. It's tricky.
Chances are, Rick Rubin had a hand in some of your favorite music, like that song we just heard from Run DMC. He also produced Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
You belong among the wildflowers. You belong in a boat out at sea.
Rick Rubin produced The Strokes, Adele, and of course, Johnny Cash.
Everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all. My empire of dirt. I will let you down.
He also produced Rage Against the Machine, LL Cool J. He's the person who guided Jay-Z on Just How to Say I Got 99 Problems. And you know the rest. Rick Rubin was always thinking big. He founded Def Jam Records in his NYU dorm room. He moved across the country to settle in Malibu, where he founded American Recordings and set up the famous Shangri-La Studios. On more than one occasion, an artist or a record company would say, "Get me Rick Rubin." Now, Rubin is not some slick, fast-talking scenester. He is very into meditation. He listens to classical music every day on the WQXR app, by the way. He has a long white beard and looks like your favorite yoga instructor. It's gotten to the point where Rubin and his creative process have a certain mystique. How does he get artists to dig deeper and express a side of themselves they hadn't yet reached? What are his secrets to success in the studio? Rick Rubin gives a little insight to those questions with his new book, The Creative Act, A Way of Being, an almost spiritual guide for those interested in creativity and a way of being that Rubin has mastered over his years. The book is out now. So let's get into my interview with Rick Rubin, who was in Costa Rica when I talked with him yesterday afternoon. We started with a bit about the book's cover design. It's a gray fabric with a big, shiny black circle and a small, shiny black dot in the center. Rick, I love the cover of this book. I like the feel, the fabric, and it's a large circle with a dot in the center. Why is this the cover?
It's an image that has spoken to me over a period of time. And it's an image that's open to interpretation. The reason I chose it is it's the alchemical symbol of the sun. But you don't need to know that to experience it for what it is. And I've showed it to different people who've looked at it have said, "Oh, that's why is there a target on the cover of the book?" And an eye doctor asked, "Why is there an eye on the cover of the book?" And a computer programmer's like, "Oh, why is there a binary on the cover of the book?" So I've had a handful of different interpretations that, and it's funny because the people who interpret it don't interpret it as if it might be those things. They know exactly what it is. And it's fascinating that we put our story onto things that we see.
And then when you turn the book over, it's just the circle without the dot in the middle.
Yes.
Is that so we can think about what we might want to put in that circle?
It could be that. That started as an artistic accident. And it was given to me, somebody printed one. It wasn't a book, it was just a pamphlet. And it had the symbol on the front and it had a circle on the back. And it was a mistake. And I saw it and I felt like, oh, this invites me to participate more than if it's a repeat. And it's an invitation to step in. Mm-hmm. So again, happy accident, and led to an interesting detail in the design of the book.
Have you had that happen in your career, a happy accident which led you down a completely different path than the one you planned?
it happens all the time. I would say on a daily basis, where we'll go in, we'll either go in completely open without any ideas, or if we go in with an idea, very quickly we learn that there are other possibilities beyond what we had in mind. So, and I'm very open to following the threads in whatever directions they take us. I think if we hold our version too tightly, it limits what it can be.
It's like the old saying, if you hold a fist, nothing gets in your hand.
It's true.
My guest is Rick Rubin. The name of the book is The Creative Act, A Way of Being. How did actually sitting down and putting your thoughts about creativity to paper, whether I don't know if you hand wrote it or you typed it, but how did getting it down in this form, in the written word, affect how you think about creativity, if at all?
Yes, I learned a tremendous amount through the process. One of the things that I would say is my biggest takeaway for me was I came to learn through writing the book that creativity happens in different phases. The phases in the book are called the seed phase, the experimentation phase, the craft phase, and then the completion phase, or could be the editing phase, depending on what you want to call it. And I'm not a deadline-oriented person. I do my best work with a sense of freedom, not feeling like it has to be done at a certain time, because my goal is for it to be the best it could be, not the best it could be by that date. So I tend to have pretty open-ended projects for over the course of my life. That's the way I've worked. And what I came to realize when I broke down the steps of the process, that for the seed phase, that's wide open and that takes as long as it takes. And for the experimentation phase, that's wide open and it takes as long as it takes. But by the time you're in the craft phase, you have a good idea of the thing you're making. Mm-hmm. It's no longer wide open. And the idea of setting a deadline, even for oneself, to get through the craft phase and the completion phase could actually be a help, not a hindrance. Whereas up until the time I worked on the book, I would have only thought of it as a hindrance. But I realized once the code is cracked and once you know the thing you're making, if you are open-ended in the time that you have, you may never finish. You may spin around and spend a long time in the 98, 99, 100% range that no one other than you would ever notice the difference. And that could be for years. And I've done that. So this is speaking from experience. I've spent years working on things that were done years before. So it was helpful to me. And now in the projects I work on, I'm completely open until I really know what it is. And once I really know what it is, then I can say, okay, I'm going to try to finish it by this time. And just for myself, just a help. And if I don't, I'm aware, I have a sense of, you know, creatively I'm behind schedule, because all of the magic part of the creation has already happened. And now I'm only at the more physical process of getting it to stay together, whatever it is. And that's not a forever endeavor.
You write about it, the experimenter and the finisher. In their nature, many artists lean towards one of two categories, experimenters, finishers. Experimenters are partial to dreaming and play, finding it more difficult to complete and release their work. Finishers are the mirror image, a backward reflection. They move quickly to the end point with immediate clarity. They are less interested in exploring the possibilities and alternatives that the experimentation and craft phases can suggest. Each might find it helpful to borrow from the other.
Yes.
What can that experimenter borrow from the finisher, and vice versa?
So the example that I gave, I'm an experimenter.
Okay.
And learning that once the code is cracked, I can finish it and I can give myself a deadline to finish it. And that could be a good thing, not a bad thing. That that was my version. And then an example of an artist I've worked with who I would say was a finisher would be Ed Sheeran, who would come into the studio. He'd play a song once, it'd be great. And in his mind, it's like, okay, what's next? He would never, at the time that I got to work with him, stop and see, is there more? Is there a way to do more? Is there a better version? Is there an alternative version? And through our working together, mm-hmm. it opened the possibility of trying new things. And many artists, there are no rules. For an artist to be able to play something and think it's good right off the bat, it be good and think, okay, I'm done with my work. It's astounding and beautiful to see. I wish I had more of that. I have less of that. I have more of the, how about if we try it like this? How about if we try it like this?
My guest is Rick Rubin. The name of his book is The Creative Act, A Way of Being. It is out now. The epigraph in this book is a quote from American painter Robert Henri. It reads, "The object isn't to make art, it's to be in that wonderful state which makes art inevitable." What are some ways that we can get into that state where one is receptive to creative impulses or thoughts?
Well, one of them is not holding our ideas too tightly, being open to letting the process dictate where we go. It's fine to have an idea to get started, but once you're started, if it finds a new direction, an unexpected direction, a direction opposite of what you set out to do, but has some momentum to it, and you see something interesting happen, allow that to happen. Another is to live in the world in an aware state where we're always looking for clues. We're always looking for inspiration everywhere. What's the thing that we notice that no one else notices? What's the thing that in the ordinary, there's a great podcast called 99% Invisible. Mm-hmm. And it's the whole premise of it is there's this invisible world of information that none of us pay attention to. But if you focus on it, it's really interesting and you learn cool stuff. And that's a great example of living with an awareness that most people let go by. And that goes, that extends beyond just the symbols of where the gas lines are, mm-hmm. which is something that you would learn from 99% Invisible, but to out into the natural world. What are the things that speak to you and why? How does the light change over the course of the day? Where are the shadows at 10 a.m. versus 2 p.m.? How does the color change as light changes? And being open to the subtle changes that are always going on around us and allowing our breath to be taken away, because when you pay attention, you realize there's so much magnificence going on mm-hmm. around us at all times. We're just blind to it because we're focused on the thing we're focused on and we're going to our next appointment or we're looking at our phones. But if we're really taking in our surroundings, really listening to what our friends have to say to us or overhearing something in a coffee shop, if just paying attention to what's going on around you, there's so much interesting information out there that we're missing.
It also sends you down rabbit holes or makes you realize it's been around you the whole time. Let's say you suddenly get into crocheting and you realize you've been walking by a yarn store for 10 years, but you never paid attention because you weren't clued into, wow, there's all these different colors of yarn in there. There's all these different textures of yarn. Who knows, you get your yarn from a goat versus a whatever animal.
Yes, and it was always there, and we walked by blindly. And it's so funny how whatever it takes to get us in to check this thing out, if it's something that takes hold in us, could completely change our lives and for the better. You know, really find new passions, find new things to be excited about. There's so much to be excited about in this world.
I wonder if that's why people like to take pictures of sunsets. If you notice that people love to take pictures of water and sunsets, and on the surface, it's just water and it's another sunset. But when you really start looking at them, they change you.
They're all different. It's different every day. And honestly, pictures don't do it justice. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that you learn in when you start really paying attention in nature. You get excited. It's like, okay, I'm going to capture this. And you take a picture of it. And it's nowhere near the beauty or wonder captured in the photo as what you get to take in. I used to be a photographer when I was young. And I had a dark room and was really into photography. And then at some point I decided to stop taking pictures because I felt like in trying to capture the moment, I was missing the moment. And I went many years without taking pictures. I probably take some now because just the nature of having the camera in my phone in my pocket. So I may use it more to take notes, you know, of something that inspires me. But to get that energy of the sunset or the colors when there's a dramatic scene in nature, pictures do not do it justice. And the work of the artist is to experience that and then see, what can I make that can give someone else that feeling? How can I participate in this act of creation in the same way that there's this magnificent sunset and I can take a picture of it, but it doesn't do it justice? What can I make that does justice to that feeling?
My guest is Rick Rubin. Of course, you know him as a record producer. He's also written a book, The Creative Act, A Way of Being. You know, you make a point in the book that you should read, you should consume art, you should put yourself in situations where you can be on the receiving end of creativity. But you really have to be careful about what you let in as well.
Yes.
What advice would you give to someone on how to curate the incoming stimuli?
Okay. We have, there's an infinite number of choices in what we consume. And we have a tiny, tiny bandwidth of what we can actually take in. So if we're choosing, why would we read the news with the horrors of the day when we could read an illuminated work of beauty from 100 years ago that stood the test of time, from 100 years ago to today, from 300 years ago to today? Why look at Instagram, scrolling through pictures on Instagram, when you can go to a museum and see beautiful works of art that have decades of appreciation? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not arguing against seeing new things as well. That's not the point. The point is to calibrate yourself with the great works of all time, the greatest films ever made. And the canon's always changing. It's not in stone what that is. But if there's a director that you love, let's say you love Alfred Hitchcock, and you learn that Alfred Hitchcock loved Louis Buñuel, watch Louis Buñuel movies for inspiration. You know what? Find who your creative heroes were inspired by.
Except that one where they cut the eyeball. I can't watch that one.
Yeah, it's rough. Chien Andalou. That's a rough one.
It's a rough one.
Brutal.
What have you read lately that you would put in this category of incoming information that has helped you feel creative?
Well, I'm currently, this morning, I was reading Quentin Tarantino's new book. It's called Cinema Speculation. Mm-hmm. And it's just making me fall in love with movies again. I watched lots of old movies growing up. And it seems like, as our culture has moved forward, long form films have fallen by the wayside in what I watch. Mm-hmm. I still watch documentaries, but I almost never watch movies anymore. And listening to Quentin talk about the great movies of the 50s, 60s, 70s, some of which I've seen, many of which I haven't, it's reinvigorating me and exciting me about watching movies again in a way that I haven't felt in a while.
We'll be back with more of my conversation with Rick Rubin, including his thoughts on the creative power of New York City. That's after the break. This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. We're back with more of my interview with Rick Rubin. I spoke to him yesterday afternoon. He's in Costa Rica. About his new book, The Creative Act, A Way of Being. Let's listen to a clip of Rick reading the first page of his new book for the audio version of this project.
Nothing in this book is known to be true. It's a reflection on what I've noticed. Not facts so much as thoughts. Some ideas may resonate, others may not. A few may awaken an inner knowing you forgot you had. Use what's helpful, let go of the rest. Each of these moments is an invitation to further inquiry, looking deeper, zooming out, or in, opening possibilities for a new way of being.
That was Rick Rubin reading from his audiobook, and I asked Rick if he thought creativity could be taught.
Yes. Yes, and it can be, let's say, acquired, because I don't know that you necessarily need to be taught it. You could, or maybe you could teach it to yourself. In some ways, the book is a manual on how to teach yourself how to do it. And the reason I'm saying that is so much of what creativity is about is finding your way to do it. So when we get taught something, we usually get taught someone else's way. Mm-hmm. And I'm wary of using the word taught for creativity. You can learn methods, but the real work is getting in touch with yourself and your own taste and what excites you and what moves you and what makes you lean forward and what takes your breath away, and then finding ways to share that. So, but it's something that we all can do. It's something we all do. Every single person we're talking to is a creative being. It's the nature of, you can't be alive as a human being without being creative. It's part of the deal. We make creative decisions all day long. And what the artist does is puts more into the choices being made. Mm-hmm. And anyone can do that. It's just like the example of the yarn store. It's like, you have to notice it, first notice it, and then once you notice it, dive in.
And we're thinking, as we're talking about this, we don't have to think about creativity on the grand scale of, I'm going to produce the biggest record act in the world. You could be creative in your kitchen tonight. You could be
Absolutely.
Creative in the way you get dressed this morning if you're a bus driver with the socks you wear.
Absolutely.
It can really be applied across the board, I think.
It's for everyone. It's finding a better route home. It's all of those. We're doing it all the time. It's just doing it with a more of a sense of not always going with the default and making considered choices.
Why is that important? Why is that important to us as a culture?
Well, it's not important, but it's what makes it art. It's the difference. What makes it an artistic choice is, real world example, I need a new sink. I can go to the hardware store, the first sink that'll fit the hole that it goes into, I could say, okay, that one will fit, let's get that. Or I could look at every sink I could find anywhere in the world and decide, how do I really want to interact with a sink? What are my options? What could the sink be like? That's my today's example, because right mm-hmm. before I got on this with you, I was looking for a sink. So many people would just say, oh, it just has to fit in this hole. That's it. The more creative decision or considered decision, again, we don't have mm-hmm. to do it. But if we are privileged enough to do it, it does improve our quality of life.
My guest is Rick Rubin. The name of the book is The Creative Act, A Way of Being. So you and I are about the same vintage. Do you think is it harder to be creative now because of distraction? Or do all the tools available to us make it easier?
I think it's just, they're just differences, but I wouldn't say harder or easier. Mm-hmm. I think it's always hard and it's always easy. It is both of those things at all times. It changes, but I wouldn't say harder or easier.
Mm. What's been a change that you have embraced? Is it technology? Is it, you know, people like to talk about social media in a bad way, but boy, there's some really creative people on Instagram doing some really creative things.
Absolutely. Let me think of what I've embraced lately that's creative. I suppose I spent most of my life making music, and I've started working on other things, like the book, like I made this TV thing with Paul McCartney called McCartney 321. I don't know if you call it a documentary. It's different. It's a different thing. But I'm interested in finding other ways of expressing my creative spirit, because it's fun. So I like the idea of looking at different modes of creativity.
How do you help people get over doubt and doubts about their own creativity?
It depends on the case. I would start by saying I listen to their work closely, and I give them very honest feedback. And in giving honest feedback, the key to giving honest feedback is it's never about the person. It's always about the work, and that we are in fact a team working together for this thing outside of either of us to be the best that it could be. Mm-hmm. And this thing outside of either of us may have originated with the maker of it, but now it's this thing. And now we're working together to say, what's the best version of this thing? And we talk it through. That's one way. Another is to lower the stakes, is to say, what we're making isn't really important. You know, most artists who make things think, I am making this is the most important work of my life. This is the thing that's going to define my entire life. And it makes it an unrealistic task. In reality, the things that we make are diary entries. They're true. They're true examples or reflections of where we are in that moment. That's all. It's only until you do the next diary entry tomorrow. That's all that the diary entry is. Mm-hmm. And I would say the way to know it's time to share a work of art with the world is when you're excited to share it with one friend. If you have one friend, if you make something and you're excited enough to show it to your friend, chances are it's ready to be released to the world. And very few of us do that. Very few of us, you know, at the time that we're showing it to our friends, it may be years away before we think it's ready to show to the world. But in reality, if you're willing to show it to your friend, that's the best barometer of it's ready.
My guest is Rick Rubin. We're talking about his new book, The Creative Act, A Way of Being. So, you know, it's interesting because I read the book, and I've read it as a book. And now I want to go back and just read one entry a day. I feel like that's my next experience with this book, because it's not only, it's spiritual. We've been talking about spirituality and sort of all of the internal work. There's a lot of practical information in this book. it is a manual in many ways. Why was that important to you to really give people things that they can do?
The hope for the book was that somebody would read it and want to stop reading to make something, get inspired to make something beautiful. And that maybe you and I would get to see that beautiful thing that someone who read mm-hmm. the book made. So it's reason for existing is to inspire people to make things. And it takes both the more philosophical side and the practical side to accomplish that task. So that's why it has both sides. And I love your idea of reading a section a day. I love the idea of reading a section randomly a day instead of in order. I love the idea of opening it randomly and seeing what message is there for you. So many books that I read today, I read a lot of self-help books. Many of them, 90% of the ones that I read, seem like they have a thesis and the whole book is an argument arguing one thesis. So usually within 30 pages, I have a pretty clear idea of what the book is. This book is not like that. It's the goal was for you to be able to read any sentence in the book and get a useful piece of information. And chances are you could find something somewhere else in the book and get maybe even the exact opposite information that might be just as useful. That was, it's one of the reasons it took so long. I've been working on the book for about 8 years.
You know, it would be great to have some sort of art show or installation of things people made after reading the book.
Wow, I love that.
That would be really cool.
I love that.
We'll be in touch. Before I let you go, obviously we're in Soho, we're in New York City. This is where you got your start in college. What is something that is uniquely creative about New York City?
I think the volume of information is really good. You can see from the most obscure to the most mainstream, everything's available in New York. So in terms of filling up your data stores, New York's a great place to do it. New York's a great place to be young and experience. I had kind of a very lucky upbringing in that I was brought up an hour outside of Manhattan on the beach. So I got to experience nature from a young age. I got to want to be in New York City and not be in New York City. And that was really a good thing because many of my friends who grew up in New York City had a more narrow view of the world than mine, because in New York City, you know what's cool. And where I came from, nobody knew what was cool. People just liked what they liked. So I got to see what regular people liked. And then I got to see what the people in New York liked. And they were two different things. And I got to experience both of those. So I wasn't too bound by being in Manhattan, but I was close enough to get all of the benefit, the museums, the theater, the classical radio station that I listened to with my Aunt Carol. Beautiful, beautiful experience of, and my dream was to live in New York City. And I went to school in New York City, mm-hmm. and then assumed I would live there my whole life. And then for whatever reason, after college, I ended up moving to California, which was an odd choice because I never liked California. And I don't even really know how it happened. I didn't move there, but I went there and I didn't leave. So after 5 years, I realized, I guess I live here now. And that has happened to me. Every time I've moved in my life, it has always been like that, where I moved from in Los Angeles to Malibu, but I didn't really do that. I bought a house to go to on weekends. And then I went there the first weekend and then I never left. And then after several years, I guess I live here now. It reveals itself. I'm not sure why I told you that story.
How, I know you have to go soon. How do you choose a project at this point in your career?
I would say it's like falling in love. You feel a connection to it. You can see a potential that you're excited to be part of, and you can see that there's something here and I can help this thing be the best it could be. I like what this thing is. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even have to be something that I like. It's sometimes I get called in where someone will come to me and they'll present something to me as, you know, we need help. And if I feel like I can be helpful, I want to be helpful. And if someone chooses to come to me and I feel like I can be helpful, I trust that they're coming to me for the right reason.
The name of the book is The Creative Act, A Way of Being. It is by Rick Rubin. Rick, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for reading the book.
We just heard from Rick Rubin talk about creativity. Now you can unlock yours and submit to All of It's Public Radio Song Project. Public Song Project, excuse me. We're inviting anyone 18 or older to send us an original recording of a song based on a work in the public domain. At the beginning of every year, certain creative works, songs, books, movies enter the U.S. public domain, meaning they can be freely shared, copied, adapted, and recorded by anyone, including you. You don't have to be a pro to submit. Your song could be a straightforward cover, an original twist on an old composition, even public domain literature and poetry set to original music. That's fair game, too. Submit to us by February 13th, and we'll pick at least three of our favorite tunes. If yours is one of them, you'll get a chance to talk about it on the air. For more information, go to wnyc.org/publicsongproject. That's wnyc.org/publicsongproject. Get creative, everybody. We look forward to hearing from you.